I was trying to think of ways of introducing myself to you, and I thought one of those ways was to tell you how I got introduced and my experience with Unitarian Universalism, so that's the basis of this sermon. The year was 1970. The governor of New Hampshire was a Republican, Walter Rutherford Peterson. The senior senator from the state of Maine was the iconic Republican Margaret Chase Smith. The boss, Bruce Springsteen, played for the Steel Mill Band at the Jersey Shore, but had yet to cut a disc. In Washington, Nixon was still president, and the Beatles song Michelle played on the radio, and MASH was in the movies, and McHale's Navy was on the small tube television. College campuses were alive with Vietnam protests, and long hair and facial hair was in fashion. The governor in Sacramento, the capital of California where I lived, was the Class B actor Ronald Reagan. The Eastern Bloc countries were strong and unified, and no one had yet heard much about the moral majority or the religious right. I was a new, unmarried second lieutenant in the Air Force going through flight school. My hair was short, but not as short as it is today. In college, I had read three prophets of liberal Christianity, Channing, Emerson, and Parker in a religion course, and I went to the Unitarian Universalist Society of Sacramento, near the now University of California at Sacramento, for the first time in my sport coat and my tie and my short military haircut to find that most of the congregation looked as if they had just come from a Woodstock concert. I was 10 years younger than anybody else at the service. The church building was the center for the anti-everything protests. I felt like I was carrying a pro-choice banner into a pro-life rally. Like many social justice-oriented congregations of the era, who saw society's faults beyond their walls, they paid little attention to the problems closer to home or within their walls. The California UUs were going through one of their hugging stages. Now, I was a New Yorker raised by a pair of non-emotional Lutherans, and we did hug occasionally, but this wasn't a funeral. After the services, those members that did shake my hand did it with a sense of obligation and a look of skepticism in their eyes. The service was on a high intellectual plane. In fact, the sermon made no impact on me at all, reminding me of a good college lecture. The music was all very classical, and the hymns that were sung were done with the congregational enthusiasm of a dirge. After the service, nobody mentioned the coffee hour to me, out of courtesy to my obvious discomfort. No one said much to me at all, and after attending a few times, I stopped. The year was 1980. The governor of New Hampshire was a Democrat, Hugh Gallant, and the senior senator from the state of Maine was the UU, William Cohen. The boss had hit the big time with a 20-song double album, The River, in 1980. And finally yielded his first top 10 single performer, Hungry Heart. MASH was now a series on television, and even with the murder of John Lennon, the Beatles' music still dominated the radio. The actor Adam Sandler was still in high school in Manchester, but that much older actor had moved from Sacramento to the White House. The Eastern Bloc countries were embroiled in their own conflicts, mostly in Afghanistan. The moral majority was now touting its own brand of morality to North America. I had lived in Las Vegas and Oxford, England. Both locations had Unitarian Universalist congregations. My hair was still short. I was now a married captain with two children flying fighter bombers in upstate New York, and regularly attended a small UU fellowship where the yearly program revolved around the term schedule of the State University at Plattsburgh. The average age of the congregation was still 10 years older than me, and the most common first name of the members was Doctor. This experience of our faith, I found, was both the best and the worst. It was the best for projecting a family as being members of the fellowship. Living more than 1,000 miles from any family, the fellowship made a wonderful surrogate. Years later, I still contact with many of the members of the fellowship. The few of us that had any children participated in the 2 or 3 classrooms that were in the basement. It was a family feeling because it was a family-sized congregation that couldn't envision itself anything but a family-sized. And it was dominated by dedicated matriarchs and patriarchs who liked the fellowship as it is. Because of its size, membership burned themselves out, keeping the congregation going, and they would leave for a while and return where they were refreshed rather than being refreshed from the congregational system. Fellowship life was very homogeneous. In fact, by virtue of being the only person associated with the airbase, I was the only non-liberal in the congregation. At one of the services, the speaker remarked to us, "As liberals, this is how we ought to react to some proposed legislation or other." Well, in my short life, I've done things I hadn't been proud of. I've even voted Democrat more than once, but I'd never been before called a liberal Democrat. And because of its size and amount of energy the members needed to maintain the fabric of the church, many of our small UU congregations never reach out more or affect their communities. This family congregation in a remote location of Plattsburgh, New York, also limited their size of growth by its homogeneous culture. They sat on the UU franchise, and the only experience of our denomination anybody knows in the area was from this small group. I saw the same dynamic repeated in many locations as I moved around. Morgantown, West Virginia, with a population of 30,000, the home of West Virginia University, with a student population of about the same number, had a fellowship of 30 members that met in an A-frame. The architecture probably tells you much about the demographics of the group as meeting them. But an area that was ripe with a population seeking our faith, sitting on the franchise, limited their options. Likewise, because of their size and the size of most fellowships, their children never got to experience the complete UU religious exploration programs. Given my experience as both laity and ministry in 40 years, I also see this model as probably the worst of Unitarian Universalism. Universally, fellowships and pastoral-sized congregations contribute not a lot to the growth of our denomination. Like many of our fellowships throughout our movement, Plattsburgh has not grown numerically or in influence in their community since I was a member 40 years ago. In the history, they tried professional ministry, but were not willing to give up any authority to their minister, and so the ministerial relationship were a little short-lived. About the best of the fellowship-sized congregations can expect is to keep their doors open, but it takes a lot of energy by the members who dedicate themselves to doing that. The year is 2000. The New Hampshire governor was the Democrat, Jean Shaheen, the first woman to hold the governorship. Springsteen had been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and reunited with the E Street Band and began an extensive reunion tour which lasted over a year. In Washington, George II would soon ascend to the steps of the White House, having been declared president by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Soviet bloc was now a matter of history, and the U.S. was now the only superpower left with no real opposition. You can still hear the Beatles despite the death of half of them. The religious right was now a political reality and feeling their oats in every U.S. major election. I had been a member of congregations in Maine and Ipswich, England, and now retired from my first career, having closed 2 air bases in England, 6 detachments in Germany, and 1 in Turkey. My head had become funicularly challenged. I had been to 2 seminaries and lived in Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, West Virginia, New York, and Chicago. I was ministering to a small pastoral-sized church in Charleston, West Virginia, the capital of the state. I found smaller pastoral-sized congregations are a little better than fellowships, but they still use too much of the community energy to keep the congregation alive. Being in the capital and the only minister-led UU congregation in the state allowed the congregation more access to spreading our gospel beyond the doors of our building. One attempt to do this in the membership committee obtained a grant from some group called the Chalice Lighters to send out a mailing to 5,000 invitations to the worship service. Now, I believe West Virginia was ripe for the introduction of liberal religion. Every other storefront was some kind of Baptist church or another. In fact, they were the only state to legally allow the use of rattlesnakes during Pentecostal church services, a religious right that the Charleston congregation had fought to protect. I got to attend one as a visitor one day. The last minister to die from this practice was February of 2014. His father died the same way as the previous minister. His son Cody now follows his footsteps. This Pentecostal religion may not believe in Darwinian evolution, but it seems to have some relevance to clergy turnover. Anyway, the membership committee obtained lists of people who would be UUs demographically, state employees, people working for social services, and numerous colleges and universities in the Charleston area. The program was in motion. Unbeknownst to me, the committee sent out invitations the week before the worship committee scheduled a soapbox Sunday. Now, a soapbox Sunday is a fun service where everybody gets 5 minutes to stand on a soapbox and tell the assemblies what they are passionate about. We gave the job of the junior high as the appointed timekeeper and gave them a stopwatch and a gong. The mailing was successful. A dozen family appeared at our doors, most overdressed for this or any UU congregation. Well, I think the one thing that really got the visitors was the Wiccan who stood up and said, "I'm a witch and I'm here to bitch." Unfortunately, I was standing near the rear of the sanctuary at the exit of the service and came close to severely bodily harm as the people exited. No one knew found a home in this congregation from this program. As you see, I've had some fun with these stories over the years. But I think from these events, I learned some lessons about myself and about our denomination. In the 1820s, Harriet Beecher Stowe, the daughter of an Orthodox congregational preacher, categorized Boston society, saying, "All literary men of Massachusetts are Unitarians. All trustees and professors at Harvard College are Unitarians. All the elite of fashion and wealth crowd Unitarian churches." 10 years later, Channing was still sensitive to this remark about his Unitarian churches from his Orthodox colleagues, who maintained that, quote, "Unitarian views are suitable for the educated, the rich, and fashionable, but not for the wants of the great masses of human beings." How has our church evolved since Channing Day, I asked. In all our churches, I find elements that were unwelcoming. In California, I was different. I felt different. I was meant to feel different because they thought of me categorically. This was being the outsider and one of those fences or walls we heard about in our reading. In California, nobody asked what I thought or felt about the state of the world. What I thought and felt was in my short hair and sport coat and tie. But I, too, was unwelcoming. I looked at the California UUs categorically. I did not see the members of the church as individuals, but as others who were different from me. I was young, and my ideas changed as I grew older. I am no longer the person I was 40 years ago, and the long-haired California rebels are probably retired stockbrokers or bankers. But how have we both really changed? We UUs are passionate in our beliefs and should bring the good tidings to all the afflicted and all those who mourn, as one of our songs tells us. In California, the members were passionate, as I was, to see a world of justice. We had just chosen an alternate means for arriving at that just society. How often in the last 40 years did I allow this thinking to obscure the individual? In the political arena, we allow this thinking to speak for the individual. This is particularly evident as we enter this political season. I have heard many UUs talk about in ways that demonize or objectify people as others. Remember the rhetoric surrounding the Bedminster golf course owner. Listen to the rhetoric surrounding police shootings. It is easier to attack people when you turn them into objects than to relate to them through what you find as being similar. In my view, when demons are created, we give people power that we demonize too much power. We make them supernatural. What are these people but individuals who feel passionate about their causes? When the Sacramento UUs made me feel unwelcome by categorizing me by my military dress, they denied me the same goodwill that they wanted me to see in them. Likewise, when I looked at their customs and dress, I did not see our sameness. I just saw our differentness. But one of the differentnesses in the culture we create in our UU congregations. Some of it is inviting, some of it isn't. And sometimes the culture may have a different effect upon different visitors. A visitor from another church tradition would find our casual dress as disrespectful and maybe unwelcoming. We have other ways of making people feel unwelcome. On a search for a congregation a few years ago, I had an interview from an old Unitarian Congregationalist in rural New England that described itself as Christian Unitarian. One of the questions I asked, well, what would happen if four pagans would show up at the meeting? And one of the interviewers told me that he would suggest they would probably feel more at home at one of our churches 20 miles to the south. This dynamic of belief has become one of those issues that can divide us. Many of our meetings founded in the 50s were basically humanist congregations. Many of are now growing, but the members are looking for more theist, looking for spiritual service, whatever that is, and do not even object to the use of the G word or the name Jesus occasionally. This is another dynamic that can divide us. On January, about 40 years ago, I had to take a four-week course in Denver. Now, my wife would probably say I always seem to disappear at difficult times, like when the moving van arrives. She will also tell you that the January average snowfall in Caribou, Maine, where I lived at the time, was over 6 feet. And yes, the snow shovel isn't my favorite tool, but duty called, so I packed my downhouse skis and went to Denver. Unfortunately, I developed an infected sinus, so I couldn't go skiing that first weekend. Instead, I went to the Unitarian Church. It was an old church with a large circular sanctuary. And at the beginning of the service, they asked the visitors to identify themselves. I was uncomfortable standing up in front of 200 complete strangers. I don't remember much about the sermon or the music or the readings, but I do remember two people who came over to invite me to coffee after the service. I remember the Denver UUs as welcoming. I don't know much about the Denver congregation, what any of their theology or political or sexual orientation was, but whatever it was, as far as I was concerned, they were living it. Well, the year is 2019. The governor of New Hampshire is once again a Republican. I have lived out of the country once again, this time in Canada. Springsteen has been awarded a special Tony and was on Broadway and stated, "Don't worry, we ain't done yet. The Eastern Band will be back on the road, he said. North Korea is now a world threat, and China is more or less our friend to the West. MASH is still on the cable somewhere, and the Beatles' Michelle plays as Muzak in elevators and easy listening stations. Stephen King's It appeared again in the movies for children of those who were horrified by the clown character the first time. My hair tonic of choice is now Solarcaine and not Vitalis, and a spurt of hair growth usually appears in my ears. Some of the leaders of the moral majority and the religious right are out of jail and back on television being moral, and I am no longer 10 years younger than most members in our churches. But now I feel that what I believe either in theology or economics or politics is no longer so important. What is important to me now is what I say I believe reflected in how I interact with the world. My Christian colleagues would put it this way: be careful how you live your life. It may be the only gospel anybody reads. In an ever-evolving and never-ending world, amen.